So it's late April 2010, and I'm actually on my bachelor party in Kansas City. It's a Saturday night, and we're out celebrating with friends at the Power and Light District. Iowa State fans know all about that, clearly. And I start getting these text messages and phone calls regarding Greg McDermott and the Creighton job. So Iowa State had just come off one of its most disappointing seasons in school history. And believe it or not, if you think back, that 2009-2010 team actually had a ton of promise going into the season. There were future pros. Craig Brackens had just come back. It's big news. Deontay Garrett saw a lot of time in the NBA later on. He was leading the way at point guard, lengthy point guard there out of Milwaukee. Do you guys remember Luka Steiger, the sharpshooting guard out of Germany? He'd shown a ton of promise. And then they had just added this guy named Marquez Gilstrap. He's this highly touted transfer. And then Chris Colvin. Chris Colvin is a guy who really gets forgotten about. He had offers from Kentucky, Marquette, Illinois. The year before, he announced his decision to come to Iowa State live on Chicago television. Everybody's fired up. Iowa State was playing Duke that year in the city of Chicago. People are really excited about Iowa State basketball, and it was a disastrous season. Steiger left halfway through for reasons that are still really kind of a mystery, to be honest with you. Colvin's attitude was horrible. There was an incident in the locker room after that Duke game with Colvin. And the team's chemistry was just really bad. Iowa State ends the year 15-17. They went 4-12 in Big 12 play. But the thing was, McDermott was still locked into a long-term contract. And it looked at the time like Iowa State was stuck. So, a couple days before the bachelor party, take it back to that, okay? McDermott had just hired Nick Nurse. Crazy enough, Nick Nurse was recently hired as the head coach of the NBA's Toronto Raptors. Along with Nick Nurse, Jeff Grayer, Iowa State legend, he's joining the program. And man, the program seems to be in flux. And you're kind of asking anybody, why would you want to come to Iowa State right now? And Creighton comes calling for McDermott's services out of nowhere. McDermott accepts a 10-year, $9 million gig on that Monday morning. The search was on, and that's where this story begins.
CF Chronicles, Cyclone Fanatic Media's new podcast series, presents Transfer U, the story behind the story of the greatest era in the history of Iowa State basketball. It's how Fred Hoiberg changed the sport of college basketball and the characters behind it. Transfer U is brought to you by you, Cyclone Fanatic Patreon members. Your monthly donations to Cyclone Fanatic go right back into making our product great. If you enjoy our content, please consider donating monthly today.
So we're back from the bachelor party. Clearly not feeling that well. And knowing that McDermott is more than likely on the go, I stayed up the majority of that Sunday night. I'm in this just crappy apartment that I live in Urbandale. It's April 25th, trying to figure out who in the world Iowa State's next head coach could be. The next day, the local media camped out at the brand new Sukup practice facility, hoping for some answers. I remember, there were 10, 12 people there, just camped out all day watching players come in and out. Nobody knew what was going on. McDermott leaves that Monday. It becomes official. And it was Tuesday when he was introduced at Creighton as the next head coach. Now, little did we know, the wheels had been in motion at Iowa State since Sunday night. Old Stealth, as I like to call him, Jamie Pollard was doing his thing up north. I happened to be filling in as a guest host on 1460 KXNO's Matt and Miller show that day when the voice of the Cyclones and then sports director at WOI, John Walters, broke the news.
Well, it was really interesting because, you know, Greg McDermott had just left for Creighton a couple days earlier, and I think people just kind of assumed that, you know, the coaching search is going to last a little while. And I started hearing rumblings that Fred might be coming back to Iowa State, and I just was working the phones all day, and then got confirmation from a number of people, enough to feel really confident running the story. And you never rest easy when you break a story. You're always, you know, on pins and needles, because there's always in the back of your mind, well, what if somebody was just, you know, wrong with their information, or, you know, something was not right. And I just remember going on the air, breaking into programming, basically, and just saying Fred Hoiberg's the new coach at Iowa State. And man, did the phone light up, and the text messages and everything started flying in. And I just remember that day because I was really excited. You know, I mean, I love Fred. And when he was a player at Iowa State, you know, he was a fan favorite, obviously, not only because he was the hometown guy, but because of the way he played and the way he carried himself. And he was just a tremendous example of what you're supposed to be as a student athlete. And I think everybody just gravitated toward that. And so I was excited to see what he could do and to see him get that opportunity. And I had no doubt in my mind that he would surround himself with really, really good people and make a really good run at it, because Iowa State meant so much to him. You know, it wasn't something where he was going to come in here and just say, well, we'll give it a shot, and if it doesn't work, you know, I'll make a bunch of money. With Fred, his situation was he wanted to see Iowa State basketball be successful, probably more than he wanted himself to be a head coach. I just think he wanted to see Iowa State get back to the level that he was used to, and he was able to come in and do that in a short period of time. And it was just really cool to see all that unfold. And, you know, that first year on the tailgate tour, Chris, right after he was hired, I mean, it was like the Pied Piper, you know, walking into those auditoriums. I remember in Cedar Rapids, there was a line around the block, you know, people waiting in line to get Fred's autograph and to get a picture with him. And, you know, it's similar to that right now with Matt Campbell, to be honest with you, but it's just really cool when you see something like that unfold. And I was just really excited for Fred and for Iowa State, because I, you know, you hoped it would work. I felt confident that it could work, but you just never really truly know until it unfolds. And as it turned out, it was a great era in Iowa State basketball.
Now, it's important to keep in mind that at this time, Fred Hoiberg had never coached a game at any level of the sport. I mean, not even like an AAU team. He'd never coached before. So from fans, local, national media, the skeptics were out in full force. My co-host on KXNO that day was Chris Hassel. He was formerly of WHO TV 13. That's where he was at the time. Of course, Chris went on to become an anchor at SportsCenter. He's now with CBS. He had to go back and cover the story on his own. So I'm sitting in that chair all by myself, and the reaction was all over the place. Now, everybody you're going to talk to says that they loved the hire when it happened, but I can tell you that they're liars, because a lot of fans were calling in unhappy about the hire. Others were saying, hey, it's Fred Hoiberg, the mayor. He scored like 2,000 points during his career at Iowa State. He had his jersey retired in 1997. This guy played 10 seasons in the NBA with the Pacers, Bulls, Timberwolves. Everybody loves Hoiberg, right? Let's get some reaction nationally first. A basketball savant, Jeff Goodman. He's worked pretty much everywhere during his career, most recently as a hoops insider at ESPN.
Well, when Hoiberg got hired, I was skeptical of the hiring right away, because I just felt like a guy with his profile was set up to fail, especially at the high major level, at a tough spot, because he had no college experience recruiting. You know, former NBA guy, they generally don't work that hard. So I kind of crushed the hire. And then they took a bunch of transfers, and it was early. It was before anybody started really going that route as hard as they went with it. So I was like, you know, taking these guys that haven't worked out at their previous places for good coaches. So, I was skeptical. I didn't think it would work, to be honest.
So I'm taking calls, really having a blast reacting to this earth-shattering news on live radio. And in walks Matt Perrault, who, along with Ken Miller — Ken was still is a longtime radio guy in the city of Des Moines — Perrault shows up. He had been gone all day. Ironically, he had been in Omaha covering the Greg McDermott press conference. He had a Blue Jay website at the time. And Peralt couldn't believe the hire. And to be fair to Matt, as we noted, many fans actually felt the same way. I mean, how could a Big 12 program, Iowa State has a proud basketball tradition, how could they hire somebody with zero experience? Matt vocalized his critiques of the hire. John Walters, who I had already set up, was on hold. Things got crazy.
John, welcome to the program. Thanks for getting in touch with us. Is it true, my man?
It is true, and I don't even think I'm going to bother conducting this interview if all Matt can do is sit there and giggle and talk about what a horrible hire it is. I know he hates Jamie Pollard, and he's got an agenda against this guy, but this
John.
This is ridiculous.
John, hold on.
It's ridiculous.
John, hold on a second.
You can't look objectively at this thing.
Let's not start throwing things at me that you don't speak for me. I don't have an agenda against Jamie Pollard. Jamie Pollard hates me. I judge Jamie Pollard on Jamie Pollard's record.
Okay, fine. Well,
what style of basketball are you going to sell with a guy who's never been a head coach and a staff that will have 5 years of experience?
We don't know what his staff is yet.
Well, you have two guys under contract, and T.J. Osterberger is probably going to stay.
Maybe.
So
we don't. That's all speculation. We have no idea what his staff's going to be. Fred Hoiberg is a very intelligent guy.
Sure,
he is a cyclone to the bone.
Sure,
to me that's a huge factor. He is going to rally this fan base now. When you're in Iowa State's position right now, this job is only going to appeal to a certain number of people. This late in the game, there's a core of people that are going to be really interested in this job. Fred Hoiberg has wanted to come back to Iowa State for many, many years. He's expressed publicly that he would love to come back at some point and be the head coach at Iowa State. I think he's a great fit. The entire fan base will rally around him. And I think it has a great chance. Am I saying it's 100% that it'll work? No. You know what? Unless they're ready to hire Tom Izzo tomorrow, there's no sure thing. It's going to be a roll of the dice, no matter who they hire. We learned that with Greg McDermott. We learned that with Gene Chizik. Sometimes a hire on the very surface of things looks like the greatest thing possible, and you think there's no way.
I don't understand how you can spin this in that way without having a question mark of a guy who's never been a college coach before.
Of course.
And you're saying that I have an agenda, but you're going to completely sugarcoat this?
I'm not.
I mean, come on. I mean, if you want to be objective, be objective.
I haven't even been listening to you guys. I was on hold for about a minute, and while I was here, every mention you got, you just had to giggle and act like this is the stupidest thing ever.
I think it's a crazy hire.
Okay,
I think it's a complete Hail Mary.
That's a clip that has become somewhat legendary over the years. Peralt currently works in Las Vegas. He hosts a national program for SB Nation Radio. Walters, who you all know, you're going to hear from him multiple times during this series, works solely for Iowa State now at Cyclones.tv, also the Cyclone Radio Network, which is owned by Learfield. Now, Iowa State's athletics director, Jamie Pollard, been in Ames a little over 5 years at that time. Spoke to him, and he says that he fairly easily blocked out this negativity.
I don't have that big a recollection of it. Part of it was, Chris, that, you know, we made the hire so quickly. We did it, like, in a day.
Yeah.
So there was no buildup to there being that. Was there some negativity? Yes. I think some people said, oh, you know, what do you do now? Because if you have to fire a legend, what's it going to be like? I remember people saying, oh, that's a huge risk. And what I remember thinking about that situation was, heck, hiring a coach is always a risk. But what Fred was the perfect thing our fan base needed at that time, which was we needed some healing and something to feel good about, because we hadn't felt good about the performance of our team in quite some time. And so that's what I remember. And so there was some negativity, but, you know, I can't say I was all that focused on it, other than I remember somebody saying, or multiple people saying, oh, what a big risk. And I remember kind of just chuckling, thinking they're all big risks.
It was on April 27th, 2010, when Iowa State formally announced Fred Hoiberg as its next head basketball coach.
Help me in please welcoming Fred Hoiberg back as our next head coach.
I haven't slept or eaten in 2 days because of the excitement that I felt. I'm going to run a simple offense. It will be based on spacing, setting solid screens, and hard cuts. It was difficult. You know, I came back last year and there was empty seats for the Kansas game. I mean, I never would have expected that. You know, a Saturday afternoon game. and there's empty seats. You never would expect that. You know, I'm gonna need help. We're gonna have to have a lot of noise in here. I can't tell how many wins we're gonna have this year, but you know what I can say is we're gonna play hard and give the fans something to cheer about. We're gonna be out there. We're gonna defend. We're gonna play the right way. And I'm gonna need the support and the help. So yeah, we need that magic back for sure.
Probably 100 fans or so, maybe more, filled the Jacobson Building to witness the introductory press conference of Iowa State's Golden Boy, better known as the mayor.
Just in a matter of a day, we went from being upset, what are we going to do, kind of desperation, to like, great, look at this. We got Hoiberg back, and the fans are really excited.
He is sharp. He's intelligent. We talked yesterday about his staff. He knows what he has to surround himself with to just make up for that lack of coaching that he's had.
Coaching is not brain surgery. It's all the things that you have to do besides coach, so relationships, communications, leadership. He has all those.
I have no doubt about his coaching ability. And people will someday look back and say, wow, he exceeded our greatest expectation.
He'll get Hilton going again, but he's going to excite the fan base, that's for sure.
I believe that he did have a plan, and he said years and years ago, as he stated today, that he's always wanted to come back here. So he's back, and we're glad to have him.
Now ask anybody who knows Fred Hoiberg well what his strength is. They are probably going to give you the same answer. The mayor is smart, he's charismatic, but he's very humble. That's the kicker. And with all due respect to his high school sweetheart and now wife, Carol, women love him. Any man who's being honest with himself wants to be Fred Hoiberg, right? Hoiberg has told the story a million times. He was an Iowa State ball boy as a kid in Ames, grew up as a standout athlete at Ames High School. He actually could have gone to Nebraska to play football. That's how impressive Fred was during his high school years. But he chose Iowa State, and to this day, Fred Hoiberg is the fourth leading scorer in Cyclone history behind Jeff Grayer, a guy he would go on to recruit, George Niang, and of course Barry Stevens. For a guy who had never coached before, the question here is, where do you start? Hoiberg's lack of an ego is where this story really begins.
Yeah, I really didn't have a game plan per se. You know, the important thing that I knew with no coaching experience was getting the right staff in place. And, you know, it was very important. You know, I thought, first of all, to keep T.J. Otzelberger on board. T.J. was a guy that I felt had gotten really good talent to Iowa State, which I know is not the easiest thing to do with all the big hitters that you're up against in the recruiting world. So, you know, I felt that getting T.J., keeping him there was very important just because of the high level of talent that he had helped get to Iowa State. The next thing that I needed was somebody that had experience, and that's where Bobby Lutz came into play. And, you know, Bobby just finished a very successful 12-year run at the University of Charlotte, where he made numerous postseason appearances, you know, NCAA. And if he wasn't in the NCAA, he was in the NIT. And, you know, to be able to get a mid-major team like that into the postseason year in and year out, and I watched his teams. I used to, when I was on the road scouting, I would see Bobby's teams, and I loved how they played with his style, and he got up and down the floor and the pace that they played with. So, you know, I felt that our philosophies on the game were very, you know, very much in tune, and the fact that he had connections all around the country, and, you know, he'd recruited all different types of players, transfers, four-year guys, junior college players. And, you know, I knew that, you know, even going back to my playing days, how important, those different avenues are when you're recruiting. I played with some great junior college players, going back to Ron Bayless and Howard Eaton and guys like that. And, you know, I knew that Bobby could help in that area. And then, the other guy that I ended up eventually hiring who really was tied into the transfers was Matt Abdelmassi. And Matt, you know, was a guy that I worked with. I hired him when I was with the Timberwolves in the front office. And he was a guy that I knew would be great at helping build relationships, which I know is so important in the recruiting world. He had a lot of ties in the East Coast, where Iowa State has always, had a lot of success getting kids to the Midwest. And, when I made a change on my staff, Matt was very important in helping get the transfers to Iowa State.
So with the staff in place, it was go time for the Hoiberg era at Iowa State. Now in the Big 12, it really doesn't matter how great you are with X's and O's. I mean, that helps, don't get me wrong, but you have to have players. Fred leaned not only on his current staff for this, but he called up a former Cyclone head coach as well, a guy who had a lot of success in Ames. He actually went on to coach the Chicago Bulls as well, Tim Floyd.
I bounced a couple players off of Floyd, and he said, don't touch them. And I said, would you have taken them when you were here? He said, well, probably. But, you know, but yeah, he's a guy that I did talk to a lot just because, you know, I consider, you know, Tim obviously a very good friend and, you know, a mentor in the coaching world just because of all the different things that he had been through, you know, and obviously getting the type of talent that he did at Iowa State to win Big Eight championships and that type of thing. So, you know, he is a guy that I talked to, but, you know, at the end of the day, I was the one making the final decision.
Interesting enough, though, Hoiberg says there was never really a master plan to tackle the primary topic of this series, the transfers. That's fascinating to me. Here we are, years later, talking about these transfers, and it was really never supposed to be that big of a deal. This actually happened organically. Hoiberg's then associate head coach, TJ Otzelberger, who is now the head coach at South Dakota State, he had a prior relationship with Chris Babb, a guard out of Penn State. That's where this started, and the rest was history.
Yeah, I think just in visiting with Fred and his basketball philosophy and you know, and what he thought could work, we had talked about being able to try to get talent and momentum into the program as quick as we could. And as we went through and talked about the different options and, you know, to try to kind of get things going in the right direction, you know, it felt like it would be tough to find a lot of junior college guys that fit that mold. And certainly with the high school guys, there's the development piece, but we kind of felt like that was going to come with time, you know, where it's going to take time to get really good high school guys. And so it kind of organically just happened where I remember, you know, Chris Babb was the first one and talked about what he had done at Penn State and, you know, and Fred's, you know, and talked about style and system, and he's a really good shooter with size and length and a smart defender. And there's some positives there. And then shortly after that, it was, you know, Anthony Booker became available, and Anthony was a, you know, top 100 player out of high school, highly ranked, big, you know, physical and, look great and could really, you know, shoot it as a big. And then I remember as we got those two, it kind of, you know, thinking about it, and as we move forward, then it kind of became a, well, maybe this isn't a bad way to do it. These guys are looking for a new experience. They're looking for an opportunity to come in somewhere and impact the program right away when they become eligible. And then shortly after that, it became Royce White, and then the class finished off with Chris Allen. So I don't think it was something that we naturally, you know, had a plan to do. It just kind of evolved when we were, you know, recruiting all the different avenues with high school, prep school, junior college, and transfers, that the best talent we could get in the quickest came in the path of transfers. And with all those four guys in that first class, it was, you know, just it was fairly unique how it all came together.
Now I'll introduce Matt Abdelmassi, another guy who was instrumental in the development of Transfer U. He went with Hoiberg from the front office of the Minnesota Timberwolves down to Iowa State. Matt is now on Chris Mullen's staff at St. John's, and he's still, to this day, thought of as one of the top transfer recruiters in the country. Here's how he remembers this thing setting up.
Well, what was going through my head then was probably, how did I end up in Iowa? But, you know, it's amazing looking back when we got the job and me and Fred drove up the first time straight up north to Ames. You know, the one thing we knew is that we had a depleted roster after we inherited a pretty good senior group, of course. Great kids that we had that laid a foundation that first year to give us a shot to gain experience. But we did know that following year, so Fred's second year, we were going to have to stock the cupboard somehow. And listen, the bottom line is it wasn't going to be an attraction for highly talented freshmen to come in. We got in late. We were going to have to make up a lot of ground with that freshman class. So really the one thing that we thought would would potentially fix it is taking sit-out transfers. It was clearly at that time unorthodox. I don't think many programs, looking back, people have asked me, really dealt with transfers the way that we were going to try and deal with them. Now it's clearly a lot more prevalent, but back then it just didn't happen. So that was, what, 8 years ago that we did it. And, you know, at the end of the day, he's right. I mean, it's not like we necessarily walked into it saying this is exactly how we're going to do things. We're just going to transfer it up and build it that way. But we knew that if we had to give ourselves the best chance possible, and we all thought the best chance was to get old, stay old, and give ourselves a chance to kind of shrink the gap that was created from the powers of like Kansas to an Iowa State, where if we were older, experienced, maybe we shrink that a little bit. And, you know, certainly that first group crop of transfers that we took year one that sat out, you know, certainly really talented, some under the radar type kids. But overall, that's how things have just transformed. And we just were realistic with what we were walking into. And I thought the realistic approach really set the table for what was a heck of a run.
And it didn't take long for the nation to take notice. You guys have to realize this is 2010. Taking a transfer back then was perceived to be quite different compared to how it is today. We'll talk more about that in future episodes. According to Goodman, a guy who has tracked transfers for over a decade, over 700 college basketball players transferred prior to the 2017-18 season. According to research done by Sports Illustrated, between 2007 and 2012, transfer rates in college basketball only increased by 1%. So you see the difference here. It was still very rare, taboo, if you will.
Well, just the abundance of transfers. It was almost, it wasn't like if they took one or two, it was like, all right, not a big deal. But when you start taking four in a class, I think a lot of people are like, there's no way that's going to work. You're taking too many, again, like I said, and I was being kind, second chance kids. A lot of the coaches were saying, you're just taking too many kids that, you know, that had screwed up in the previous place. There's a reason they didn't make it there. But what they didn't understand, I think, at that early stage was second chance also meant kind of last chance for a lot of these kids. So they had to buy in or else there was no other option. Where you're going to that first school and you've been coddled and told how good you are and your ass has been kissed throughout. So you feel like you can do anything, right? You're enabled.
Yeah.
Where it fails at that first school or it doesn't work out, you go and you kind of bounce somewhere else. And then it's like, hey, listen, if it doesn't work out here, you're done. You got no other options. Maybe you can go overseas or something like that, but your stock is at its absolute lowest if it doesn't work here. It's not our fault. It then becomes your fault.
All right, that sets the table for us right there. And I'm joined now by Brent Bloom here on episode one of the Transfer U podcast docuseries here at Cyclone Fanatic. And Bloom, you were with me on that bachelor party where
yeah.
this whole thing began.
Right.
And I don't know if you remember your thoughts, but when I'm starting to get these calls about Greg McDermott to Creighton, what's going through your mind?
Well, I think number one is who in the world is going to want the Iowa State job right now? Because they were in such a bad place. I mean, it's easily forgettable because of the run of success Iowa State would eventually have. We know the outcome of this story. But back then, keep in mind, Iowa State had not been to a postseason, Chris. A postseason, not the NCAA tournament, not the NIT, not the college invitation, whatever they used to call it, the CBI. They hadn't been to a postseason since 2005.
Mm-hmm.
They were in such a bad place. Craig Brackens had just declared for the NBA draft. They had other people thinking about transferring. It's like Iowa State was in a really rough spot for a program, and now you've got a guy who they had just hired two members of McDermott's staff, and you're thinking, okay, well, we'll give it another shot. And now he bolts for Creighton, and you're thinking, what are we going to do here? I mean, Iowa State was in a really rough spot. They were the only BCS team to not make a postseason from 2005 to 2011, the only one out of the 65. This was not a program that was doing well. They weren't even winning games at Hilton at this point. So
where do you turn? It was really a, it was an interesting time for Iowa State basketball, and they were not in a healthy place at all.
We'll hear more from Jamie Pollard coming up in the next episode about the steps that he took. But we're really going to start to focus on, Brent, the transfers themselves and why Fred Hoiberg did what he did. And it really, again, I don't want to give too much away for the next episode, but it's a vision where I think a guy who, a couple of things. One, had been not coaching, but he had been at the NBA level for a while.
Sure.
Understood the type of player that you needed in this day and age. But two, having played in the Big 12, one of the things that I think made Fred a valuable coach was he realized, yeah, you got to be a good coach. You got to put these guys, line them up for success, but you have to have talent, and you do that in any way possible, and that brings us to where we are today.
No doubt. And it was at about this point where you're thinking, okay, you know, he's got a staff in place. You can kind of see some of the strategy going forward. And then when he gets those first couple dominoes, you know, Chris Babb and Anthony Booker were both not big names. I mean, at this point, the transfer term for Iowa State fans is really kind of poisonous because they had just been victimized by Wes Johnson, who had transferred from Iowa State to Syracuse. Yeah. And, you know, Haluska had transferred from Iowa State to Iowa a couple years prior. There weren't many notable transfers recently for Iowa State on the good end. I mean, there was Alex Thompson who was, you know, didn't do a whole lot. So this was like, okay, what exactly are we trying to do here? And yet, you start to feel the momentum shift a little bit. That first year with Fred, and you know, we'll hear more about this as this goes, you kind of get it, okay, this might actually work out. Like, this could pay off in the end, but yet you still have history against you. Because Iowa State had been poor for so many years now, and you're in the Big 12 that's been so good, too. So there was a lot working against Iowa State, but you're dead on. The couple things Fred had in his favor, one, he knew talent. I mean, coming from the NBA, having played in it, having been in management, he knew he wasn't going to win games with kids from high school right away, and he wanted to turn around this thing fast so Iowa State could become a player quicker than everyone wanted.
Yeah, in the route that they went, then that's – we'll kind of tee up the next episode of Transfer U here. And that's, Brent, when we get the transfers on campus. How did it work? And when I say that, what's the vetting process like? Who are these guys as individuals? Because you have all sorts of different egos and personalities that you're piecing together. What was it like coaching them? And most importantly, and I think the most fun part of Transfer U, the podcast series, what was that scout team like?
The legendary scout team. That's the thing. It's one thing to get them to Iowa State because a lot of these guys were on their last chance, realistically. But how do you keep them here and keep them happy? Because that's a long year when you're used to being a part of the process, especially for a guy like Royce White, who is the centerpiece of this whole era and really the biggest domino to fall. But yet you still had him on campus, and that guy hasn't been able to really stick anywhere for multiple years. And Iowa State had to keep him happy and also knew that he was the straw that stirred the drink, so to speak. And it's really a fascinating story.
On the next episode of Transfer U, we'll outline the transfers themselves. Who were these guys? What were they all about? How were they treated? How were they vetted? This is where Hoiberg and Iowa State changed the game.
CF Chronicles Transfer U is the story behind the story of the greatest era in the history of Iowa State basketball. It's how Fred Hoiberg changed the sport of college basketball and the characters behind it. CF Chronicles are brought to you by you, the Cyclone Fanatic patrons. Your monthly donations to Cyclone Fanatic go right back into making our product better for you, the Fanatics. Chris Williams is the executive producer of CF Chronicles. Jared Stansberry was a producer as well. Ross Peterson is the audio editor. Brent Bloom contributed to the research. Music during CF Chronicles Transfer U is courtesy of AudioNautics.com. Various clips in this piece are courtesy of KCCI-TV and WHO-TV.